Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Joining us on the Mattress Rust Hotline, it is entertainment reporter for Fox 5, Kevin McCarthy. Hey, Kevin.
JB.
Kevin, how are you?
Kevin, good. John Wick is kicking butt. Tell us why.
Did you guys see it?
No. I've seen the first couple.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, John Wick opened up last week. Obviously, it was number one at the box office. Huge numbers for that. I mean, the reason why it's such a big deal is it's R-rated. It's extremely violent, and yet it's doing really well at the box office. And the reason why these movies do so well is because the director, and I've mentioned this in your show before, John Wick 1 and 2 were directed by a gentleman named Chad Stahelski, and Chad Stahelski is actually Keanu Reeves' stunt double from The Matrix. So that's why all the action in these movies looks so good, because they have a guy who's used to filming action and choreographing action as a stunt guy now directing Keanu Reeves in a massive R-rated action movie. So
that's crazy.
Why
that's got to be super rare, right? A stunt double turns into a director?
Yeah, so it's actually kind of interesting. So basically, if you go back to John Wick 1, Eric, David Leitch and Chad Stahelski were the two directors of that movie. David Leitch was a stunt double also in The Matrix. He went on to direct Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron. He also directed Deadpool 2, and now he's doing Hobbs and Shaw. This guy, Chad Stahelski, the guy who directed this one, John Wick 3, has done all three John Wicks. So to your point, it's extremely rare. But also, you got to think about it this way. I mean, it makes perfect sense that these guys, if you go back to The Matrix, for example, one of the most famous scenes in The Matrix, there was a scene in the subway fight where Neo is fighting Agent Smith, and they're in the subway together, and they lift each other up to the ceiling and break the ceiling and fall back down. Essentially, Chad, who was the stunt double of The Matrix at the time, blew out his knee doing that shot. And, like, you know, Keanu Reeves doesn't step in for those scenes. So you think about, they understand how audiences perceive action, and that's why when you watch John Wick, it's all long, continuous takes, and the actors are actually choreographing all their action. So Keanu Reeves is really doing a lot of what you're seeing. The craziest thing about this movie, have you guys heard about the dogs?
No.
Oh, okay. This is going to blow your mind. So they basically trained dogs in this film to bite the crotches of stunt guys.
Okay.
So what they did was, this is wild, this is not unlike anything I've ever heard before. They had to bring in camera crews 3 months early, and they had to train these dogs to actually attack the crotch area of a stunt guy. Now, there's a lot of those sequences that happened in the movie where the stunt guys get bitten right there. So what they had to do was, they put these green harness elements around that area. The dog actually attacks the stunt person, bites down. Now, the problem is the dog does not know it's making a movie. So the dog does not know when they yell cut to stop biting. So the stunt guys had these levers in their pocket. They'd press a button, and the harness would pop off, and the dog would continue biting down on the harness. They'd bring a dog into a calming room and let the dog chill down for 5 minutes, and then they would reset. Now, the craziest part about that is, this is all happening during a massive action scene. So if you've seen John Wick 3 yet, there's a major scene with Halle Berry and Keanu Reeves as they're essentially taking out a bunch of bad guys. And in this scene, you're seeing dogs attacking the bad guys. And so the dogs had to get used to every single thing in that scene, what the camera guys smelled like, what the camera guys looked like, how the cameras were moving, because these guys are off the shoulder. They're shooting the action within the action. So when you watch the movie, you have to appreciate how much work went into actually shooting these scenes. And these dogs could attack anybody at any moment, but they were trained so well they didn't. Pretty wild.
So you love the movie, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. I know that's super interesting, super minute details, but I just find that to be a lot of reason why this movie looks so good. I mean, you think about how much work goes into a scene. Just Google search Halle Berry and Keanu Reeves' gun training for John Wick 3. It will blow your mind. I mean, these guys, I think Keanu Reeves is over 50 years old, And this guy is still crushing it and showing that people need to be doing their own action and choreography. I mean, you can tell when there's lots of quick cuts and terrible stunt doubles and things like that. Not that stunt doubles are bad, but it's really good when you can see the actor doing it.
Who do you think is the best at it? You think Cruise is the best?
Yeah, I mean, people like Tom Cruise and Keanu Reeves and Halle Berry set a bar. I mean, you think about, like, that's the difference between these actors that kind of are in that age range versus the newer actors. I noticed this a lot in interviews with the older act, not the older actors, but the actors who've been doing this for a while, like Tom Cruise. There's a different level of respect for the business. And sometimes I understand when I walk into these rooms with the younger stars, there's just a bit of, I don't know, jadedness already, and I find that to be fascinating. Not every younger star, but someone like a Keanu Reeves, he doesn't need to be doing this, but he is, because he actually cares about the way you view his movie. And, like, the guy has so much money. Think about it. He has Matrix money. He doesn't need to be training for months and months and months for action scenes, but he does because he cares about how the audience perceives.
Do you think he's as bad an actor as he's reputed to be?
No. Dude, Keanu Reeves, think about it this way. Keanu Reeves has picked the perfect roles for him. John Wick is perfect for him. Speed was amazing. I love The Matrix. Bill and Ted's great for him. It's not like he's starring in Shakespeare. I mean, the guy does a great job within what he's in. And I think we can all admit that Speed was an amazing movie. I love Speed.
I know, but it was like 30 years ago.
Yeah, but so is The Matrix. But Eric, have you seen John Wick 1 or 2 or no?
No.
All right, so if you're not familiar, like, the basic concept is in John Wick 1, like, essentially his dog gets killed and he goes on a revenge rampage. But this particular John Wick 3, the story is not as strong as the first two, but the action is the best out of all three. So it's funny, I would argue that 1 and 2 are better movies, story-wise, but this particular film has the best action, no question.
Is it getting great reviews other than you?
Huge. Oh, no. Go to Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, dude, this is like, I think it's over 90-something percent. Jason, this is definitely right up your alley. I mean, it's Lawrence Fishburne, Halle Berry, Keanu Reeves, pure nonstop action. And you're talking about some of the most insane choreography. I mean, most action scenes have all these quick edits and stuff. They just put the camera on and go. But watch the dogs. Imagine being that stunt guy and taking that dog, right? I mean, think about that for a second. I mean, that's unbelievable to me that those dogs were trained to do that, and they succeeded. No one got hurt.
Now, you have a bunch of movies to talk about. Aladdin is one of them. Are the kids going to like Aladdin?
Yeah. Okay, so I gave John Wick 3 a 4. Aladdin, I went with a 3 out of 5. So growing up, Aladdin to me was my favorite Disney movie from an animated standpoint. I loved Aladdin. Jasmine, I had the biggest crush on Jasmine as a kid. Funny story about Jasmine. I know it sounds funny, but I was lucky enough to sit down with Robin Williams, thankfully, years ago for this movie called Happy Feet 2. It was, I didn't like the film particularly, but when I sat down with him, it was an animated movie. So I was like, I just wanted to ask him, I was like, is it weird that I had a crush on Jasmine as a kid? And he went into this entire thing about how he had a huge crush on Jessica Rabbit when he was a kid. He was doing all the Jessica Rabbit sound bites, and it was just really cool to, like, sit down with that person who played the genie in the original Aladdin and get validation that it was fine to have a crush on an animated character as a kid. And now this live-action remake, you have Jasmine being played by, a person. This is a live-action remake, and her name is Naomi Scott. She's incredible. She is the best part of the film. And I think Aladdin is an unnecessary live-action remake, but I didn't mind seeing it. Guy Ritchie directed this, which is kind of strange. Guy Ritchie did, like, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch and a bunch of R-rated, like, movies that don't really fit into what Aladdin would be. He also did Sherlock Holmes as well as The Man from U.N.C.L.E. But, yeah, this movie's fine. I mean, if you went and saw it, you'd walk out and go, okay, that was cool. I mean, I think the biggest thing they do here is they actually expand Jasmine's story. The movie kind of dives into more of the relationship between Aladdin and Jasmine. Will Smith plays the genie. He's fine, but he's Will Smith the whole time, in my opinion. I feel like,
yeah, he's getting a lot of criticism for this role.
Well, the problem is when they released the original CGI of what he looked like, the blue genie, it just looked kind of goofy. And I think that there's something about Robin Williams' genie, and listen, I think it's inevitable that people are going to compare the two because Robin Williams' genie is one of the greatest characters ever, and he just you know, he disappears in that role, even though you kind of hear Robin Williams. Will Smith, you see physically. I mean, he switches back and forth between human form and genie form. So it's just kind of hard to separate the fact that it's Will Smith. And, you know, some of the singing was a little bit off. But I will say this. For kids who haven't seen the original Aladdin, for families, here's what's going to happen, JP. Adults who grew up on Aladdin are taking their kids to see Aladdin, right? So it's kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of a nostalgic thing. I wouldn't say it's worth full ticket price, but if you want to go to a matinee, I'd recommend it. But it's nothing mind-blowing. It's just fine.
All right, so tell us about The Perfection as we talk to Kevin McCarthy from Fox 5.
Oh, my God, this movie. Okay, this is probably top 10 most disturbing movies I've ever seen. I mean, it is horrifying.
Now, is this in the theaters or is this Netflix?
This is Netflix.
Okay.
So this is a movie starring Allison Williams and Logan Browning. So Allison Williams, obviously, we know from Get Out. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. So this movie, every 20 minutes becomes a big twist. So whatever you see in the trailers, whatever you expect this movie to be about, it goes nowhere near that. So, for example, the idea here with this particular movie is you have Allison Williams, who is, they're music prodigies, and she kind of teams up with this girl named Logan Browning, and they go on like a trip and adventure together. They're both cello players. Something horrific happens to Logan Browning's character, and that's really all I can say. If you watch the trailer, you'll see like things crawling in her skin. You'll see her attempting to cut her arm off. There's just some horrifying things happening here that I can't really get into without spoiling anything, but it's an hour and a half, and it is just relentlessly brutal horror to a point of just disturbing. Like the last shot is going to haunt me for a long time. It's crazy. And Allison Williams, if you guys saw Get Out, she was the girl in Get Out who brought Daniel Kaluuya home. That whole twist happened. The beauty of what happens in The Perfection is that she kind of plays multiple different types of characters throughout that are kind of like, they're tricking the audience. The whole movie is a trick. It's pretty wild. I loved it. I gave it a 4 out of 5.
I just while you're talking about it, I was just looking up some notes about it. Is there a big projectile vomit scene?
Oh, yeah. Dude, there's lots of projectile vomit in the movie. Well, like, gross. If you watch the trailer, you'll see Logan Browning's character going through that element. And, yeah, here's what I will say. I wonder if my reaction to the movie is more about shock. As I look back at the film, I definitely find things I didn't particularly love, some of the editing, some of the rewinding clips in the scenes. But overall, it's a very solid and very unique horror film, and I gave it a 4 out of 5. But it's not perfect, no pun intended. I just think that there's definitely some – I know, Cakes, I think this would have been a good movie for you a couple of years ago when you were kind of into horror.
But that's fine. Out of 5 for The Perfection. And then you wanted to talk about Rocket Man a little bit, which is the Elton John movie.
Yeah, so I'm on vacation next week, so I wanted to do a review for this for Eric, because I know Eric was super excited about it. So this is an R-rated musical based around the legend of, you know, Elton John. So a couple things that I was a little bit worried about going into it. Elton John's
an executive. So it's a musical, not a biopic.
Yeah, okay, I'm glad you brought that up. So Bohemian Rhapsody was essentially a biopic about Queen. So in that particular case, the music was done through the concert footage and the rehearsals. The music here is actually done through both. You actually do it through concerts, and you do it through moments where the actors just break out into song and Elton John songs. A couple differences here. One, this is R-rated. This is very R-rated. We dive into every aspect of Elton John's life. Even though he's an executive producer, there's a good point in this movie where he looks like a total jerk. Everything that he was going through with the drugs and everything, the way he treated his family and the friends, they do not shy away from making him look bad at all. But the music is incredible. We all know Elton John, and kind of seeing his rise, going to the Troubadour, everything about that is absolutely incredible. And Taron Egerton plays Elton John in the film, and he's absolutely brilliant. This is one of the best performances I've seen in a long time. Is it better than Bohemian Rhapsody? I'm still kind of going back and forth on that. They're both great. Eric, you like Bohemian Rhapsody, correct?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So if you like that kind of movie, so Eric, just imagine Bohemian Rhapsody with an R rating, mm-hmm. if you can imagine it. There's just, they don't, like, if you look, I'll give you a great example. In Bohemian Rhapsody, at one point, Lucy Boynton goes to Freddie Mercury's house, right? And you see all the cocaine and everything lying around the house, but you never actually see the drugs being done or the sex scenes. This right. movie gets into all of that.
How so are the performances? Part of the thing about Bohemian Rhapsody is the performances so mimicked the real performances. You know, it was crazy.
Well, and I'm glad you bring that up, Eric, because when you watch the Live Aid performance in right. Bohemian, that is shockingly amazing. Now, I will say about Bohemian, I don't know that Elton John, at least in my opinion, in this particular film, has an iconic moment. I guess the Dodger Stadium performance. No, I'm wrong. There are so many iconic Elton John performances that are recreated here. I think Live Aid was such a big deal for Queen that it's kind of embedded in our minds of what it looked like, so you almost go, oh my God, that's exact. Mm-hmm. I think Elton John was at that Live Aid performance, but they don't do that in this movie, but it's amazing. I mean, Eric, you're gonna love it. I love a good biopic, and I give it a 4.5
Plus,
out of 5.
Plus, I like Elton John. I mean, who doesn't like Elton John? I love a lot of his songs.
So a couple fours.
And I give it a 4.5. And the cool thing about Rocket Man, Eric, is that, like, it's told through his music. So it's not really, like, chronological in the sense of some of his biggest songs come near the beginning. Like, you see, like, younger Elton John rising, becoming Elton John, meeting. The coolest thing about Elton John, you guys know who Bernie Taupin is, right?
Sure. Yeah. His writing partner.
So
right.
He's a writing partner. That whole story blows my mind. Like, Bernie just comes to him with these lyrics, and then Elton puts down the music and sings, and it's just wild to see that connection kind of happen on screen. And Jamie Bell plays Bernie Taupin. It's an amazing movie. Eric, you're going to
I know I'm
going to
like it. But you liked Bohemian Rhapsody better because you gave that a 5, didn't you?
Well, yeah. No, I didn't give them both a 4.5 out of 5. I think Bohemian, I prefer Bohemian because it's a celebration of Queen. So there's two major differences here. Elton John's movie is primarily about Elton John. Queen's movie is about Queen. I wouldn't call Bohemian Rhapsody a Freddie Mercury biopic. I think that this movie is particularly a Elton John biopic.
All right, Kevin, enjoy your vacation.
All right, have fun.
Yeah, I love you guys. And all also right. Go see Booksmart. I want to mention that movie real fast. Booksmart. It's amazing. Olivia Wilde directed it. Go see it. Jonah Hill's sister's in it. Beanie Feldstein. She's incredible. Loved it. Go see Booksmart.
Is that a comedy?
Movie. Yeah, it's a comedy. Two high school kids realize that they didn't party enough in school, so they go all out on their last night of school. It's awesome. Nice. It's like super bad, but it's very well done.
Ooh, I like those type of movies.
All right, we got you. All right, thank you, Kev.
All right, I love you guys. Thank you guys for giving me my life.
All right.
Life.
But yesterday on...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Overtime, he went on this rant, and that's why we're going to have him on, about the Nationals. Here's what Russell sounded like last night.
For Yan Gomes forgetting how to catch. He came here from Cleveland with like a 72% rate throwing guys out and no pass balls. And every inning is a pass ball, if not two, and I'm tired of it. And Brian Dozier, go back to wherever the hell you came from, because you didn't back up Yan Gomes, who stinks, and you can't field. And okay, you hit a home run every once in a while and you run into one. Congratulations. And while you're at it, take Kyle Bearclaw and now ship him back to Miami, who's coming here, and all of a sudden Miami's better than the Nationals. So we're doomed. Bryce Harper, 18 Bryce Harpers could show up tomorrow night at Nationals Park. We're doomed. We're done. It's over. It's extinct.
And Chris Russell joins us right now. Maybe he's calmed down a little bit. What's up, Chris?
I'm such an idiot.
I'm surprised you didn't have a heart attack last night.
It could happen, right? I could see it happening.
I mean, you really got worked up there, buddy.
You got to see the video of it, fellas. It's pretty impressive. Nick Ashew was literally taking video as I was doing that rant, and that was not like for the video. I didn't know he was doing the video, but the video is pretty impressive. I was sweating profusely, and the bottom line is I was a little upset because I guess what started that and what you heard the Bryce Harper reference was is Chris Miles from NBC Sports Washington, and who of course hosts Overtime from time to time, said the reason why the Nationals are 11 games under or whatever it is, 12 games under, is because they didn't bring back Bryce Harper and they have all this bad karma and bad energy in the building.
Well, I don't even think he believes that, truly. I believe he's egging you on there. And, of course, you go for things hook, line, and sinker.
Well, from time to time, I get a little fired up. I mean, here's the bottom
line.
What's
the most troubling aspect of this Nationals team to you? It has to be the bullpen. bullpen, right? Yeah, Who do you blame that on?
I mean, how do you look at it? And that was my point. And Nick had also made the same point, too. And that was the beginning of our show. It was like, look, yes, there's no doubt they miss Bryce Harper. They miss his presence. They miss how teams can attack and pitch around. And just, I guess, that feeling that you're one swing away from taking a lead or tying a game that Bryce Harper provides. But the bullpen, which, guys, I just looked up, right, and we all know the numbers, is 7.02 in ERA through 50 games. I mean, that's absurd. Like, whatever you thought of Mike Rizzo's plan, whatever you thought of the Nationals' plan over the offseason of Rosenthal and Barraclough, you say, all right, well, maybe these guys aren't world beaters and that they're not going to, you know, keep the Nationals' bullpen under a three, right? None of us, including myself, so I have to say this for me, I never thought it could be anywhere close to being this bad. So that's the number one problem. But then when you combine that with terrible defense, which has been a consistent problem, and then you look at the first three innings, Jason, I know you said you didn't watch the game the early portion of the game yesterday. It would have drove you crazy. I mean, I was pulling my hair out because they're sitting there with the stick on their shoulders, not swinging, five called strikes in a row, runners on first and third in every inning with one out or less, and they couldn't score a run.
I saw at one point, I just looked at my phone, looked up the update, and they had 10 hits.
Oh,
I think 10 hits through maybe like five innings and had one run. I was like, how are they not scoring?
They left so many guys on base.
I mean, it was just double play at Palooza.
Well,
it was
ridiculous. Did FP drop this nugget during the game that they lead the league in called third strikes or something like that? They're very close.
That may be the case.
Yeah. This is the question I threw out.
Here's the thing. They strike out a lot. We know that. Yeah, whether it's called strikes or not, and certainly yesterday it was, they strike out too much.
They're third in the league in strikeouts, or they were at least as of a few days ago. Here's what I threw out to the boys. Why is Wander Suero still on the big league roster right now?
Well,
they don't have better options.
There's got to be somebody else who's got a better than a 7.17 ERA out there.
Because they're infatuated with the stuff.
Okay, yeah. I'm not saying cut him. Send him down. Let him get right in the head.
So I would say this, up until about, 3 weeks ago, maybe 2.5 weeks ago, sometime on that West Coast trip, the guy, Barraclough, that they had settled on him as being kind of that setup guy, that bridge to Doolittle, right? And then he imploded, gave up that late grand slam against the Dodgers, gave up a couple of home runs in the next couple of games, one against the Mets and one against the Cubs, I believe, last Friday night in that shellacking. And so now you're constantly searching for a guy, the guy, any guy with a pulse that can get you 3-4 big outs in the seventh and eighth inning. So they were trying Suero just because of natural stuff. I know, talking to Grant Paulson last week at one of these games, I think it was the Nats-Mets afternoon game, he was like, why don't they go to Suero? Why don't they go to Suero? And I'm like, I don't think Davey trusts anybody, nobody. And how could he, especially at this point? There's nobody you can hang your hat on, nobody. And even Doolittle, you know, had a bad outing the other night and struggled late last week in that Thursday afternoon game against the Mets. So I don't know how much you can count on him every night now.
Yeah. I mean, if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. That's the kind of stretch that they're in
right
much.
Now. I mean, they need complete games from their starters, quite honestly, right. Which is not going to happen.
But you bring up a good point. It's more than just the bullpen, which is on track to be historically bad, like literally the worst bullpen of all time, which you couldn't foresee. Yep. But they did say, and I took it as a given, that when they got rid of Bryce, okay, sure, they were going to miss some of that production, but they were going to certainly be better defensively, and that hasn't been the case at all. I mean, Soto's been kind of a mess out there. Robles has had his moments where he's been a mess. I mean, all those guys have actually had their moments, like pros, like guys have been around, which
terrible
is what's really frustrating.
Yeah, and going back to that rant, Yan Gomes came here again with this tremendous reputation. I mean, we all knew he could hit. If he could stay healthy, that was the question. Not how many pass balls was he going to be allowed. I think he's up to 8 or 9 at this point.
And he hadn't even played that many games.
No,
I mean,
exactly, because Suzuki, A, you couldn't keep him out of the lineup because of his stick. And now, when you look at how Gomes has caught the position over the last week, I mean, I was at last Saturday night's game against the Cubs, the last game they won. He had two pass balls in three batters, and then another one yesterday that was ultimately changed to a wild pitch, plus a throw that sailed about 15 feet wide of second base that Dozier didn't back up. And that's another guy. Dozier came here as a gold glove second baseman reputation, and at times he's turned a couple of impressive double plays, guys. But he's also butchered a couple of balls and just, I mean, it's just one thing after another. And I know they're still injured. I got it that Zimmerman and Adams just came back and they were having Kendrick at first and all these. I understand that. But how many more excuses can you? I'm running out of excuses. I'm running out of time to defend Davey and say it's not his fault. I mean, at some point, it's Memorial Day on Monday. If you lose 3 out of 4 to a Marlins team that's won 6 in a row and that has an ERA over 2 in the last week, I mean, under 2 in the last week, if you lose 3 out of 4, you have to make a move. You have
they're
to make a
50
move.
Games in, and they're 12 games below 500. As I said earlier, if you ranked all the teams and you don't just look at divisions and leagues, they're 28th out of 30.
Yeah.
They're terrible.
Yeah. The Royals and the Orioles are worse, and the Marlins are tied with them in the law in the loss. What do you call that? The loss standings or
the loss column.
I agree with you. I've tried to defend Dave, even though he's uninspiring to me, just because I think it's so easy to blame the manager.
Absolutely.
But I'm right with you, EB. But they're so bad that, I mean, it's impossible to defend. I mean, go ahead and fire in it, whoever you want. Who cares? No matter who you bring in, you bring in God. Yeah. He's still going to have, at this point, grace, Sip, Suero, Barry. He's still going to have the same dummies he's going to have to turn to in the 6th, 7th, and 8th inning, and they're still going to be in the exact same pickle.
Yeah. You guys talk to Rizzo every Wednesday, and you do a great job. I listen to it religiously, and he tries to politic everything. And the one thing that he said on Wednesday that struck
me... He owns up to a few things, I think.
Right. I mean, Wednesday it struck me, and it was something that I talked about last weekend, which was allocation of resources, right? Nobody would argue that it's not a good idea to build 1 through 3 in your starting rotation the way they do with Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin. The problem is that he doesn't have the resources to then really go invest in a big-time setup guy, a 7th, 8th inning guy, because they allocate so much of their resources. And again, I understand why in the top 3 in their starting rotation, it leaves them bare at 4 and 5, and then it leaves them bare at 7 and 8, and then they have to trade some of these young arms in years past, the Felipe Riveros and the Blake Trinans, because A, they can't be patient with their development, and B, because they need veteran relievers who can get outs in key spots because they don't spend any money in free agency on the damn bullpen.
And hey, by the way, to make things worse, last night Lucas Giolito had a complete game shutout
in Houston.
I know.
He shut out the best team in baseball.
I know. Riz is just waiting for Ronaldo Lopez to start throwing darts again. Whew,
I feel bad because all those guys, like Gio, supposedly is pitching well. Sean Kelly's been sort of revitalized.
Trinan's been an all-star.
Yeah.
Felipe Rivero throws 100 from the left-hand side.
Part of that, to be fair, like with Trinan, like if you went through each one, Trinan was... I think they feel like Suero is like Trinan. Like they love his arm, they love his stuff, right? And that's what you always heard with Trinan, and it just wasn't working out. So eventually they moved him on, and he figured it out elsewhere. And that's probably what they think about with Suero. Like he's got the stuff, he's got that cutter, which is really good against left-handed guys because it comes inside on them.
Does a pretty good job as long as he doesn't hang like one bad pitch yesterday, right? I know he gave up the double down the left field line, but okay, that's going to happen. It's just these one bad pitch type deals, and I know one bad pitch counts and changes the game and changes the course of a season, but you just can't make that one bad pitch in that spot.
Hey, this is just opinion.
I think Suero is worth keeping.
This is just opinion. Did you feel like Davey Martinez is... ejection. Did you feel like that was contrived?
Some of it, yeah. And it should have been, by the way, because if you're not going to kick and turn over post-game buffet spreads in the clubhouse, which I can't imagine Davey is ever going to do, if you're not going to really ride guys and get in guys' face and, you know, do it old school like Billy Martin and Earl Weaver used to do to ride players, it's a different game, it's a different world, you have to do stuff like that. And it immediately worked. I have no idea if it had the impact that we all think it did, but it's hard to deny that it woke some people up. It fired some people up. You got guys in that clubhouse or dugout that are like, wait a second, does this guy believe in us? Does this guy want to be here? What else could go wrong? We need something, a little kick in the pants, and it's exactly what it provided. And then literally 5 minutes later, the bullpen blows it.
Do you think that the team will get booed tonight?
Yes.
I mean, if McGowan gives up like a 2-run jack in the first inning, they're going to boo. They're going to have to boo.
They should,
Jason. McGowan is starting.
Kyle McGowan's starting.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Here's the question. I don't know what I don't know what you guys think. There might be not more than 20,000 people in the building tonight. I know it's a Friday night. I know it's fireworks night, I think,
yes,
and Memorial Day weekend, but you have a opponent that nobody cares about, so you're not going to get the caravan of Mets and Cubs and whatever fans. And the Nationals fans, I think, are tapped out or are resentful or really upset, and I don't blame them if they don't show up.
I think that's something that the learners are going to fear, that it's going to happen this summer with this team so far back.
They should.
We'll see where they are
should.
In attendance.
You know, they should spend some money on the manager and the bullpen. How about that?
What is the likelihood, in your opinion, Chris, that Davey's still managing the team? And not that it's Davey's fault, but someone's going to have to be the fall guy at the end of this series.
At the end of the series? I think he'll still make it through Memorial Day, therefore the end of the series. I think they'll find a way to at least split this four-game set. If they lose three out of four, certainly if they get swept, I just don't know how you don't make a move.
Right.
But to me, as much as I want to, and I'm right with you, EB, it's not his fault. There's not a lot he can do. I don't think differently. There's little things like that intentional walk situation you guys were talking about in the eighth inning yesterday. Absolutely, that was weird.
I mean, I don't get it. I mean, Ramos isn't Johnny Bench.
Right. No, there's little things he can do, but
I
don't think there's massive fixes that Davey Martinez can make. But bottom line, if you get swept by the Marlins, and I know they're red hot and they've always given the Nationals problems, you get swept by the Marlins and it's ugly, you have to fire him. If you lose three out of four, I'm right on that fence. But, you know, at some point, you're just running out of time to say it's not his fault and you've got to do something to wake people up.
Well, it doesn't matter whose fault it is at that point. If you just keep losing, then
you just
have
to do something, right?
People just lose
their job. You've got to slap something to the wall. I tell you what, Bo Porter is really smart. I mean, watching him on Masson all the time, I don't know if he's a good manager. I know he's really good at baseball. I know he's really smart at baseball.
Somebody said he's been really critical lately on the post-game stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. He just, the way he analyzes, like, again, if you can translate that to baseball and helping guys out, I think it would translate a little bit. I don't know how good of a manager he is. Obviously, he didn't have a fair shake in Houston, but the bottom line is he sounds really smart when he analyzes the game.
All right, Chris, got to run.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
All right, join us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, as he does every Friday. Best-selling author, Washington Post columnist John Feinstein, who's brought to you by Golfdom. Located in Tysons, Virginia, or at golfdomgolf.com. Visit today to experience the best in golf on and off the course. Golfdom, live the game. Good morning, John.
Morning, fellas. How are you? Happy Memorial Day weekend to you all.
Mm-hmm. Likewise. Yes. What are the weekend plans for John Feinstein and family?
Oh, very quiet. We're just going to hang out as a family. We're going to go to a barbecue on Sunday. Jane starts swimming this weekend, so that's kind of cool. And after the last week when I was up in New York for the PGA all week, I'm very, very happy to be home.
Was that a long week?
It was a long week, Jason. And it's not because of the golf. Brooks Koepka was brilliant. I love that golf course. But the logistics of covering a major just aren't easy. Getting into the golf course, leaving the golf course, especially on Long Island, with the traffic around there. It was a long week. But by the way, it's my job.
Yeah,
saw some shots of John. He was like right next to the announcer guy.
Yeah, apparently Kerry Haig, who was in charge of the golf tournament for the PGA, wasn't happy about that.
Really?
He sent an email to Julius Mason, who's the PR guy, saying, "What is John Feinstein doing in the shot?"
Mm-hmm.
They want a clean shot of the announcer. I was just thinking I'm standing out of the way of the players and caddies over there on the side. Never occurred to me that A, I'd be on camera, or B, that anybody would care.
Did you stay in a hotel or in a house?
Hotel. It was just a little too far to go out to Shelter Island and get in and out each day. Would have taken me at least an hour and a half every single day each way.
Ugh.
So I stayed in a hotel.
Who sets that up for you? Do you set it all up yourself?
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact. Golf Digest would have gotten me into the media hotel, but the media hotel was a Hilton. And my attitude is, if I'm going to be away from home for five nights, I'm going to get Marriott points. So I got myself into a Marriott.
By the way, I was listening to a guy talk about, it's a gambling show. Go figure, right? And one Vegas sports book has set Koepka's total majors won at seven over under at 7.5. So if you like the over, you know, he wins four more.
How could you not like that today?
And by the way, it would expire on his 50th birthday, which would be 2040, because I believe.
Right, 21 years.
I like that.
21 years. So for in 21 years, if you bet the over 7.5, and he's got to win four majors in 21 years. That's a pretty damn good bet. And you're getting plus money, too.
You know, right now it certainly looks like a good bet. If I were a betting man, I would bet that way. That being said, we never know, do we? That especially in golf. I mean, if you had taken it, let me ask you this. When Rory McIlroy won his fourth major 5 years ago when he was 25, and you had been offered that same bet, you'd have jumped on it.
Yep. Absolutely.
What would you do with it right now?
Over seven, still over
have
seven
21
and a half
years, right?
Yeah, he's 30. He's just a lazy year old.
He's
got to
win four more. I mean, I still think it's possible with him. He's so talented.
Of course it's possible, but my point is that 5 years ago, you'd have jumped on it with both feet.
Of course.
Now you have to think about it.
Yeah.
You're right. But Koepka just seems like a different animal in these majors than everyone else.
He's remarkable. There's no question about it. He has a great mindset about them, and you know, so it's funny because I wrote a column earlier this week about the fact that some of my colleagues still don't want to embrace Koepka as a great player. You know, they say he's boring, which he's not. He's very smart.
I think he is boring.
Well, he's not.
Of course,
Eric.
What we see.
If you go back and take a little time and read his press conference transcripts from last week.
Yeah.
Okay. And then go and read your guy Tiger's press conference.
No, Tiger's
and you tell
too.
Me who
no,
says
no.
more interesting things.
No, I'm talking
it's
about
not even close.
No, hold on, John.
It's
just
charisma.
Settle down.
John, settle down.
I'm not saying he's
what's charisma? Shaking your fist? That's charisma?
Well, no, it's inarguable that Tiger has more charisma on the golf course than anyone else. You can't even argue that.
I'm not going to argue that. Yeah. I mean, if charisma is shaking your fist and
and
getting all fired up when you make a putt, that's fine. I have no problem with
it's
that.
Whatever he has.
You've never heard me criticize Tiger Woods golf.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying he's boring on the course. I'm not saying off the course or
he's
even
boring on the course. He's won four majors in the last eight, and that's boring.
The way he handles himself,
63-65, the first two rounds of a major.
No, that's boring.
Brilliance is boring.
It's spectacular, but the way he does it is just boring.
Okay,
to me.
So he's not shaking his fist. Jesus, Davis Love, who is one of my favorite people in sports, has never cracked a smile on a golf course.
He's very boring on a golf course too. Yeah,
but he's a great player. He's a Hall of Fame player, and he's a Hall of Fame guy.
I didn't say he wasn't.
I don't care if a guy shakes his fist. If he does, fine.
That's fine.
If he doesn't, fine.
Right.
Let me watch him play golf.
Right. I'm just telling you, for my taste, I'd rather see a little more charisma.
I know, and I disagree with your taste. So we have different tastes. You know, my wife loves Parmesan cheese. I can't stand it. So people have different tastes.
Exactly.
But there's something to what Eric's saying. You can't discount it because, look, I'm not a golf guy.
I'm not discounting it. I'm asking you, have you ever listened to at length or read in any detail the things Koepka says?
Of course. I find a guy who has a huge chip on his shoulder.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean,
the greatest athletes have Michael Jordan didn't play with a chip on his shoulder.
Absolutely, another douchebag.
Michael Jordan?
Oh yeah.
Oh okay. I'm sure in your lengthy the lengthy amount of time you've spent with him, you know what kind of person he is.
No, but I mean that's how these guys present. A lot of these guys, that's how they present themselves to us. In my opinion,
I read the Jordan rules. He's a jerk.
Yeah, I don't think Jordan's the greatest guy.
I'm not saying Jordan wasn't a jerk and hasn't been a jerk at times.
Yeah.
But I knew him in college, and back then, before David Falk got his hands on him, he was a good guy.
Hold on, we're going into a whole different discussion.
Yeah, that was before he was affected.
4 years ago. Yeah.
I kind of agree with you more on this. I don't know what Eric really wants to see out of Koepka. I think they're all pretty much the same. I mean, what's Jason Duffner give you? What's Keegan Bradley give you?
Phil gives you the sheepish smile and he tips his cap and everybody loves him.
I mean, when Ricky Fowler...
Now, with Phil, it's a little different because Phil signs more autographs than any player in history, and that's one of the reasons
Phil
he's so popular.
A little more charisma.
John, when Ricky Fowler won the Players a few years ago, he just gave like a small... I mean, that's a pretty big tournament, and you'd think he won to John Deere.
Yeah, he's boring, too.
So, I mean, they're all
the
same.
No, Ricky is as nice a kid as... It's funny because when I was on with you guys during the U.S. Open 2 years ago, remember when Ricky was leading the tournament?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, and you asked me about him. And I said, he's as nice a kid as you'll ever meet. He doesn't have a lot to say. And his agent's a terrible guy.
No.
And I got a text from his agent that day saying, you know, I hear you, you know, you called me out and I hear you called Ricky stupid. Oh. And I'm going to tell Ricky that you called him stupid. Well, I didn't call him stupid. I said he didn't have a lot to say. Oh. And I texted the guy back and I said, look, if you're going to quote me to Ricky, quote me accurately. And by the way, my opinion of you is shared by just about everybody in the media.
Is that Terry Riley?
No. Stan McNaughton.
Oh, okay. Oh, no.
Who is the worst guy in golf. And by consensus. If you were to go and interview people in the locker room, other agents, members of the media, and say, who's the worst guy in golf, it would be almost unanimous Sam McNaughton.
Oh, okay.
I just want to say I'm not a golf guy, right? And I agree with what Eric says to an extent because, and I don't know how to quantify it, all right? And I'm not reading transcripts, John. But when I tune into some of these majors, and I only will watch the majors, and I only watch a couple of shots on Sunday, there are certain guys which intrigue me, whether it's Phil or Rory McIlroy, maybe even Jordan Spieth.
Yes.
Brooks Koepka is kind of boring.
That's the way it is.
I don't find brilliance boring.
Yeah. Well, it's neither just, do I.
That's established.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, let's go back for a second, and we don't want to bog down in it, but let's go back for a second to Jordan, Michael, not Spieth. Whatever you thought of him as a person, and a lot of people do think he's a bad guy, watching him play basketball, right. That's a different sport. It's more electrifying.
Right. Right.
Was electrifying.
Absolutely. Same thing with Tiger.
And Tiger, at his best, was at, see, that's what bothers me. I wrote about this. On Saturday, I went out. You guys saw me on the first tee. I went out and watched for a while. I watched Koepka and Spieth, who were the last group. And when it came back inside, Koepka's lead was at like 8. And everybody in the media, oh, this is so boring. Oh, my God. You know, it's a blowout. Well, when Woods was winning the U.S. Open by 15 or the Masters by 12, or when Phil ran away with the Masters that one year, or when Rory won the U.S. Open here by 8, I didn't hear anybody say it was boring.
Because he wasn't boring the way he did it.
Because those other guys
different.
Have the intangible charisma. They just do.
Hey, you know what was kind of cool, John, about Koepka? He played, and I think Nabila talked about this, he played – a practice round, I think, on Tuesday with two of the club pros, including John O'Leary, who's over at Trump.
That's pretty cool.
That's my point
about Brooks being a good guy.
He's a good guy.
When I was standing on the tee, now when the players come on the tee, there's a walking scorer, you know, the kid who holds up the standard,
right.
And there's an official scorer who's an adult, and there's a referee who is there to make rules calls if need be, and the players routinely will shake hands with them. And most of them just shake hands and keep moving. I mean, they're getting ready to play. You understand that. Brooks stopped in front of each of them and said, "Hi, I'm Brooks. Thanks for coming with us today." And I swear to God, when he did it with a teenage girl who was carrying a standard, I thought she was going to faint. So he goes out of his way.
That's really
nice. And again, not a big deal, but I always, you know, I'm not the only one who says this, but we all know that if you're going to judge people, the best way to judge them is when they don't think anybody's watching them.
Sure. I like that.
There were no cameras on at that moment. They were watching guys who were already playing. And he just routinely went out of his way. "Hi, I'm Brooks." Really? They don't know you're Brooks Koepka? It's like the first time Bob Woodward introduced himself to me at the Post and said, "Hi, I'm Bob Woodward."
Right.
And I wanted to go, "No kidding, you're Bob Woodward."
Well, it's nice to hear that he's a nice guy. That's great.
I'm glad you're willing to concede that possibility.
Of course. I'm willing to concede anything. Except that Tigers doesn't have charisma. I mean, come on. Are you kidding? He's got charisma.
I never said he didn't have charisma.
Okay.
I said he does.
Right.
Good. Get your question.
Here's one thing I want to say, though, about Brooks. I'm surprised people didn't pick up on this because one of the narratives the whole week is like, man, this guy is so dominant in the majors, but why is he only won 2 regular tour events? So
right.
I saw him in an interview, though, and he said the answer. And no one picked up on it. He said, "I try harder in the majors.
Yeah.
I got all my guys here. I got my 3 swing coaches. I got my physio. I got my the other ones, I don't really care as much." I mean, he said the answer.
Look, most really good players feel the same way. They might not say it as bluntly because they don't want to, you know, insult the sponsors that are so important to the tour. I mean, the tour lives to make their sponsors happy week in and week out. But he's being honest as opposed to saying, and he did say, I think I will win more. He pointed out he's been second 9 times in regular events. Sometimes he's just been outplayed. Sometimes he hasn't played well down the stretch. But yeah, I mean, Nicklaus used to say, "I build my whole schedule around the majors." Tiger used to say, "I build my whole schedule around the majors."
That's what the great players do
because we had this conversation last week and I said to you guys, how many tournaments has Jack Nicklaus won?
Yeah. Right.
And almost no one knows the answer, but everyone knows he's won 18 majors.
You're right. You know, one thing he also said, though, is he said, you know, when I go home, I don't practice. You know, he's one of these guys, like Jack, like Tiger, does his whole game, as John's saying, around the majors. And, you know, let's see how long he can do this. You know, maybe he can do it for 20 years.
What did you think about the crowds?
You know, as you guys know, I'm from New York. I grew up there. I played that golf course as a kid every summer. I think it's gotten to the point now where the New York crowds think it's cool to be rude.
Yeah, right.
And I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I thought they were close to over the top when the Open was played at Bethpage in 2002.
What was the worst thing you heard?
Oh, profanity.
Yeah, but I mean, add a particular.
And then the chant, you know, when Kepka's walking off 14 green, yeah, and they're chanting DJ, DJ, because Dustin's making the run up ahead. And, you know, why do that? Why do that? I mean, if you want to root for Dustin, that's fine. I got no problem with that. But and of course, Brooks, again, showing that he's a pretty tough guy, said that helped me. And he didn't criticize the New York fans. Harold Varner, who was playing with Kepka, did criticize the New York fans and said they were over the top. And they're sort of given license to be rude because they're from New York. And I don't buy that. I don't think anybody should be given license to be rude. I was not thrilled with
Can you imagine what it's going to be like in the Ryder Cup?
And that's funny. You know, it's funny because Kepka set a new record for bulletin board material 5 years out, saying good luck to the Europeans in the Ryder Cup in 2024 when
because
it's here.
Of that, right.
And you can bet the Euros will use that.
Yeah.
Hey, real quick, we had so much on golf. I wanted to get your take on the Nats, their troubles, just sort of your position on it. What do they do? I mean, they got to do something.
Well, he's a Mets fan. He loved it.
Well, you know, it's funny because, again, I was in New York last week, and all the talk last weekend was that Mickey Callaway needed to be fired.
Right.
And he does need to be fired. He's a terrible manager. And when Robinson Cano doesn't run out of ground ball last Friday and says the scoreboard had the wrong number of outs,
right.
I mean, you've got to sit Cano down at that moment. And Mickey Callaway came out and said this. He said, I'm not going to reprimand somebody to make him an example for the rest of the team. That's exactly what you're supposed to do as a manager. That if someone's not hustling, you say, he sits. And if any of the rest of you don't hustle, you sit. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, they were all talking about firing Callaway. The Nats come to town, and they sweep all four games, as we know. Ridiculous losses for the Nats in some cases. And, you know, Boz is now saying Davey should probably be fired. Barry Sfaluga saying maybe they should look at trading some of their stars. I agree with everybody that firing Davey Martinez is not going to turn this team around. Mm-hmm. Because you could bring back Joe McCarthy, and he's going to bring in the same guys in the 6th, 7th, and 8th innings, and they're still going to pitch badly.
Right.
Rizzo did a bad job during the offseason rebuilding the bullpen. And, Eric, I know you're defending him, saying, how could he know? Well, you know what? That's his job to know. Mm-hmm. His job is to know when a guy might be a year too old or when a guy had a career year and isn't likely to have another career year. He did a bad job rebuilding the bullpen during the offseason. And think back on this for 1 second. I know you guys got to get to break. But go back to when he traded for Papelbon. He didn't need a closer. He needed an eighth inning guy. He traded for Papelbon. He let Papelbon demand that they guarantee his contract for the next year and demand that he closed, even though Drew Storm was doing a very good job closing. They brought him in, and then when the Harper thing happened, instead of saying, okay, Rizzo saying, I made a mistake. I blew it. I never should have brought this guy into the clubhouse and cut him on the spot, he defends him and brings him back the next year. That's bad work.
All right. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Have a great Memorial Day weekend, guys.
All right. You too.
Shows you what he thinks of Harper, that he kept him.
By the way, when you were saying that Brooks Koepka was boring
to me, that's all.
You weren't saying he wasn't a nice man.
You just have different definitions of boring.
Right. Well, yeah, I would say I might love hanging out with him. But I'm saying watching him play golf, even though he's a Terminator, it is a little bit boring.
See, the problem is you're such a Tiger guy, Tiger Mark, you're comparing everyone to Tiger, and no one compares to Tiger.
Well, no that's but I think Rory's more compelling.
Right,
I think Phil's more compelling.
That's why
they just have a little
in.
Bit more personality.
I mean, Rory kind of, you know, he bounces around the course a little bit more, maybe smiles a little bit more, but he's not that exciting.
Our guy, Pete Medhurst, joins us in the studio, and he has some exciting news.
Pedro, how are you doing,
Pedro? For
those
that aren't following him on Twitter.
How's Pedro doing today?
Pedro's doing really good.
Uh-huh. What do you got planned for this weekend, my friend?
Tomorrow, I am umpiring 4 games up at Fairland Park. And Sunday, I got Nats Talk Live.
Fairland Park. Played many tournaments there.
Yeah, I got Sunday, I got Nats Talk Live, following with the Nats and the Marlins.
Good.
And then Monday, I'll be at Nats Park because I got to take a bus ride with the team.
Now, before we get to that, a quick question. Mm-hmm. Did JMU play UCLA yet in the first game?
No, tonight's the first game. What a great opportunity to go up against Rachel Garcia, one of the greatest in the history of the game.
Tell these guys how good Megan Good is.
Megan Good is fantastic. She plays in a small league. That's the problem. CAA doesn't get a lot of publicity. Got to give James Madison's, especially
what sport
spring
are you
sports,
talking about right
softball.
Now?
We're talking about softball.
James Madison, okay. Got to give them a lot of credit. Their spring sports program, especially on the female side, they've really stepped it up.
They're
national
good.
Powers in lacrosse and softball now. Major, they're national championship type contenders now, which is darn near impossible for a CAA team. They've done an amazing job.
They're doing
job.
Something right.
Yep.
All right, so you mentioned the bus ride.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that. Why are you going to be on a bus?
After the game Monday, I'll be with 25 professional players, support staff, headed to Dulles, taking a flight to Atlanta.
Oh.
For what reason?
Oh, I'm going to be broadcasting the Nats and the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah!
Look at the smile.
Charlie Look at that Slows. Smile.
Look at the smile
now,
on his
now
face.
How long has this been in the works? Because I know you've submitted audio before and Charlie raved about it.
Yeah, it's been in the works for a while, but, you know, you always keep it under wraps until the team gives you the courtesy to, you know, put that information out there. And I know, you know, Mike Artell came to me, our digital guy, the other day and was saying, hey, we want to do I don't know anything. I said, you better call the Nationals, make sure it's okay with them first. And then once, you know, they got that approval, the station put something out yesterday. In fact, somebody else tweeted it to me. I saw it. I didn't even see it.
So is this your first crack at play-by-play for Major League Baseball?
Yes.
Has this been a dream of yours since you were a kid?
Absolutely, since I was 5 years old.
Is this probably the number one gig, is calling baseball, Major League Baseball game for a young broadcaster like you?
I think any
your
professional
number one
sport. I think any professional sport. We all want to call something. We want to call pro football. You know, when I was 16 years old, Frank Herzog came to the Board of Education and spoke in Anne Arundel County. And, I mean, I'm sitting in the front row, and as soon as it's over, boom, I make a beeline up to him. I'm the only guy that wanted to talk to him. Afterward, because you know, you want to pick his brain and get some advice and stuff.
But is it baseball, like radio play-by-play, like for baseball? It's like the
thing,
gig.
Right? Baseball. The great thing about baseball is baseball gives you the time to be descriptive. It gives you the time to, you know, you're talking about the flags, the smell of the air from all the, you know, the popcorn, the hot dogs, whatever. I mean, my God, we've got so many concessionaires now at games. You don't know what you're going to smell.
Right.
Quite frankly, on the concourses, you know. Describing uniforms, players, how they walk up to the plate. I mean, there's just so many things that you can do, especially on the radio, to describe the atmosphere of a baseball game. I think as we were all growing up, there was probably a lot more lure of baseball. It's always been that way in terms of a radio sport.
It's just been radio.
Do you know which innings you will broadcast? Because Charlie does, like, innings 1 and 2, maybe?
Yeah, and then I think Dave does 3 and 4. Charlie does 5. The other night I heard Dave do 6. Then I think Charlie did 7. Dave does 8, and Charlie does 9.
Now, is that standard in other markets, by the way? Or is that unique here?
I think it varies. It varies. Because right now in Baltimore, they have one play-by-play guy, and they have a color guy.
Yeah.
So the play-by-play guy does all 9 innings, and then the color guy just kind of chimes in.
That's the more traditional way,
no, the traditional way in many markets
just one guy.
Is just one? I don't know.
One guy with a reliever. I remember growing up, like when John Miller used to do games for the Orioles.
Oh, it's him and Joe Angel. John Miller and Joe Angel.
Miller, I feel like he did like 6 innings,
yeah, but
and then
Joe
Angel maybe did 3.
But then the Orioles switched from, they went Joe Angel, and who's the other guy that they had? They had Joe Angel, and they had another play-by-play guy.
Can't remember.
The guy that says in
either
the
way,
win column.
Either
who's,
way.
Who is that?
That's Joe Angel's the guy that said in the win column.
Okay, well, it's the other guy. They had two play. They essentially had a Dave Jagler and a Charlie Slows. I can't remember.
Either way, it's awesome. It's awesome.
It's,
and you've been knocking on the door
they
for a
long
time.
They wanted to let me do one batter.
How much like preparation is involved? Now, you're a veteran play-by-play guy. You do an amazing job on Navy football games. You do all these other things. How much baseball have you done in the past? As a play-by-play guy, and how much preparation you're going to have. You know the team. We all know the team.
Right.
But it's different because
biggest thing
you
is,
need to know the opponent.
Biggest thing is knowing the opponent. Obviously, you know the Nationals every day because you cover that team every day. You know, but now the Braves have brought in so much young talent over the last couple of seasons, not just Ronald Acuna and Ozzie Albies, Freddie Freeman, Nick Markakis. It's guys like Austin Riley, who had game-tying home run in the 8th yesterday, game-winning hit in the 13th for them. in their win over the Giants. They've had a similar situation to the Nationals in terms of the bullpen. They've had a revolving door of relievers because they've had same issues the Nationals had in the bullpen. If they were able to close out some games, they'd be in first place in the NL East right now. But they have blown tons of games out of that bullpen.
Are you more excited or nervous about this opportunity?
There's both. I think if you're not nervous, then you're not human,
right?
In a situation like this. I equate it to when I had to fill in at Laurel for a month for Dave Rodman, the outstanding track announcer there. And look, Charlie and Dave are the best in the game. And people who listen every night expect that same level no matter who's behind the microphone. And you have to live up to that standard. If you don't live up to that standard, we know Twitter...
you're going to hear about it right away.
Today, yeah, there's no question about it. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. You have to live up to the standard that those two guys set. So it's a huge challenge from that standpoint.
You're going to do fine.
By the way, Fred Manfro was the guy.
Yeah, Fred Manfro.
Because they had Joe Angel and Fred Manfro.
Yeah. I thought they did the two guys because in this instance, like if one guy's not available, then this the one guy would do it.
Yeah, but, I mean, it varies from market to market. I mean, you know, Phillies go Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson, the former relievers. So, I mean, some teams do it that way. Some teams do it with two different play-by-play guys during the course of the game.
Right. Well, it's awesome, Pete.
Thanks.
Super excited for you. Nobody deserves it more. Nobody works harder than Pete. Pete walks around here, I'm going to be honest, pissed off a lot of the time. He feels like people don't appreciate his talent.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, no, he does. He thinks that. He thinks that
he gets better when AWOD gets his
he
own
rightfully
show.
Thinks he should be a bigger silly.
Right.
No,
but
not
this
necessarily.
This is a great opportunity for you, and you deserve this platform.
Well, we'll see. It's up to me to, you know, all you do is want an opportunity. I mean, thousands of play-by-play guys across this country every year send their stuff to ESPN, Fox, all this other stuff, and, you know, they all get the rejection city letter. I mean, we've all been there. So, I mean, when this type of an opportunity comes in your lap, you got to take advantage of it.
Put me in, coach.
That's it.
Pete's ready to
exactly
play.
Right.
I'm sorry, you probably already said this. How many games are you doing?
I'm doing two in Atlanta, then three in Cincinnati next week, and then I have two other games after the All-Star break in Philadelphia.
That is awesome.
Nice.
That is awesome. Congratulations to Pete Medhurst, buddy.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Pull for him.
I'll try not to let y'all
games
down.
On 106.7 The Fan.
Oh, you'll kill it. You'll absolutely kill it.
I might.
You do. You do.
We'll see.
He does Big Ten lacrosse. Anything he does.
Hey, just don't talk about a pitching coach who's already dead. And
oh, like dude, brutal.
It's like the softball
that
play
was
by
brutal.
Play.
When y'all played that clip the other day, I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
You don't go anywhere like that. If you don't know
stay away. Yeah,
don't go. I mean, how many people, I will say this though, how many people this year, how many Major League Baseball broadcasters this year, people who do a Major League game, will have done water polo, wrestling, track and field, football, basketball? I mean, I can't even tell you how many.
An umpire and ref.
4 games at Fairlane tomorrow.
Hey, one of the listeners wants you to refer to the bullpen as the poopy pen if they blow another one.
I don't think I can do that. You're probably on Nationals radio network.
I don't know. It would make me laugh.
You might have a new manager though. Talk about.
Well, you know, if that's the case, we'll give you all the background on whoever the new person is. If that move gets made by the club.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.